You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Got to keep it interesting. And when I say interesting, I mean gross.
I'm Alex Higley.
And I'm Lindsay Hunter.
And I'm a writer.
Bud. Welcome to I'm a Writer, But. Today we have Nikki Dolson, who's the author of the novel All Things Violent and the story collection Love and Other Criminal Behavior. Her stories have appeared in Votrin, Triquarterly, Tough, Thuglit, and other publications. Her fiction has been nominated for a Derringer, and her story Neighbors was selected for Best American Mystery and Suspense 2021. Amazing. How do they even, you don't even know that they're considering you, right?
In this case, I did not. I did not submit the story. I submitted two others because literally there's an email and you can just email. I published this last year and send it. And they will do that because, you know, there's lots of things everywhere and it's hard to read it all. But yeah, Todd Robbins over at Votrin, I guess, I don't know if he just sent my story or sent the whole issue to them. And yeah, they read it. Steph Cha and the guest editor Alifair Burke read it and picked me, and screamed around the house and then sent like a screenshot to all of my mutuals, like, is this real? Is somebody shitting? Like, I'm going, you know, I mean, everything's on
it.
Twitter, so I go on Twitter and I'm looking, I'm like, nobody's talking about it. Is it not real? Is this a scam?
This is like you called it earlier, it's bucket list stuff.
Yeah, completely. Like I can cross that off because I just, you know, I thought the best thing ever was when I just got in the back because, you know, they have like the,
oh, for
the,
sure.
30, yeah, the honorable mentions, yeah, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I managed that 2016.
Yes.
And I was like, yes, this is close enough. We're counting it.
Yes. Hell yes.
Absolutely.
I would put that on all the rest of like all my future books.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh yeah. That, yes. You're just in it. You're in the book. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Forever.
Well, that's amazing. And congratulations. And I will get a copy of that to read. I can't believe I have never read. I love mystery and suspense writing, and I have never read that anthology before.
Neither have I. I got to pick it up.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so great. I mean, honestly, it is the thing that got me back into pursuing writing.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
I ran across the 2005 BAMS at the a Sabres, which thrift store.
Yeah.
And it was like, but I think Michael Chabon was guest editing it. So what was in there was like Dennis Lehane and all these other writers that I had never read before. And just, but I mean, like, it ran the gamut from like full on crime to like fantasy crime and just everything in between. And it was just like, oh, you can do all this in a short story and all of these worlds, and they all work together. Like, I get why they're in this book together, because they're just at that level. And hit, you know, different parts of you when you're reading it. And it was just like, okay, this is the thing I'm going to do. And it was, I kept it forever. I still have it. Still sitting on my shelf. That
I love
particular BAMS is the greatest thing. And so whether you're into crime and mystery and all that, I think there's, you know, these aren't straight, you know, these aren't necessarily PI stories or Agatha Christie or things mm-hmm. like that. They are, I think, consistently another level of depth is there. Mm-hmm. It's rarely just about the crime.
It's literary. It's literary mystery and suspense, I guess, is what how people would
yeah,
talk about
I mean,
that, you, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, I definitely get caught up in the plot and a lot of things, but to dig into character more. Right. And I think consistently those stories that show up there are doing that.
Mm-hmm. I'm not immersed in that world. It's fun to hear you even rattle off like nuances of the genre just right at your fingertips. Like, yeah, it's not really a PI one. It's more like an Agatha Christie. It's like, I don't know. I love that. I love that.
On that note, I want to hear you read.
Oh, okay. So I'm going to read a story called The Mistress.
Yes, from the book.
Yes. I'll start. I am the mistress. See me lurk in the near dark. See that man walking into the suburban dollhouse, the guy in the good suit with the well-trimmed beard that is softer than you can imagine. He used to be mine. He hasn't seen me yet. I'm parked a half block down the street. If he were to look this way, though, he would recognize me. I'm not in a wig or dressed in a cat burglar black, head tucked into a balaclava. I'm in that blue dress he likes, the gun, a Beretta subcompact, a gift from a different boyfriend is in my purse. The only concessions I've made to my task are the kitten heels I'm wearing. They have bows in the back. I check my lipstick and hair in the visor mirror and smile. If I get caught, I'm going to look good for my mugshot. See the mistress kill time by swiping left on the dating app she met him on. I see men hugging women in their profile pics, couples looking for thirds, men writing about wanting a long-term relationship, but still listing casual sex under wants, left, left, left. Mr. Adulterer's profile had none of these things. There were only two pictures of him. Each showed off his sweet smile and intense gaze. I got chills looking at his picture. You're beautiful, he wrote to me. Gorgeous lips. I would like to do things to you. But first, you should let me buy you dinner. So I did. Then I let him take me to his hotel room where he unzipped my blue dress, then contorted my body in all the best ways. He is a talker. It was how he spoke to me, his voice low and smooth that did me in. I felt the reverberation of his voice in me for days after. He severed contact with me 3 weeks ago. It's full dark now. His street is empty. All the luxury vehicles snug in their garages, teacup dogs and the wives who own them all drugged for the night. Often we met at his house, glorious afternoons spent in each other's company, thrilled by the possibility of his neighbors looking at us. Sometimes we met in hotel rooms on the strip. Rarely we met at my apartment downtown. He didn't like my place. It's too something. He meant it was to me. All my dresses and heels and pinup girl style. I should have known he was about to end things. I am the mistress. See me make to his house, peek through the window and gaze into the darkened rooms. His is a dollhouse of perfection, everything just so, but a doll is missing. Where is his missus? I wonder if she's left him. She did sound upset when I called her this morning. Upset, but not surprised. All that matters is he's home alone right now. The house doesn't have an alarm, but it does have a broken lock on the sliding glass door. He didn't fix the lock because his wife nagged him about it. As soon as she stops, I'll fix it. 15 years of marriage, and you'd think she'd know me. She doesn't get me at all, baby. Not like you do. Then he pushed me to my knees. Mr. Adulterer likes his mistress on her knees. I wonder how much time the doll has spent on her knees in her perfectly appointed home. Did the cold seeping up from the kitchen floor tiles make her knees ache like it had mine? I wonder how he will look on his knees. I am the mistress. See me move silently from room to room on a path of artfully strewn rugs. I loop the kitchen twice and run fingers down the marble counters. I caress the stainless steel appliances. I peek at the laundry room. I wonder about the stack of half-folded towels. I decide the doll has left him. I nearly giggle, but refrain. I wonder what he will say when he sees me. I stop in the dining room and admire the cherry wood table with its 8-plus place settings. Hundreds of dinners were eaten here while Mr. and Mrs. feigned happiness. I wonder how long he was married before he stopped being happy with her. I wonder if it was longer than the 4 months it took for him to get bored with me. I hear a noise and press myself against the china cabinet, purse clutched to my chest. I hold my breath and listen. Again, the sound. Panting? Like someone exercising, maybe. Mr. Adulterer suddenly worried about the extra pounds? Or, perhaps, he's found a new playmate. I think of his last email to me after I begged to know why we were over. He wrote, "It was just sex, baby, and you look like you could use the attention." I can't wait to give him some attention. I pull the Beretta and move quickly into the living room. The noise stops, and so do I. It's dark except for the television, which is on but muted. The back of his favorite chair is in front of me. His hand dangles off one side. I step onto the hardwood floor. My kitten heels tap, tap, tap as I walk around the chair, but he doesn't say a thing. "Hello, love," I croon as I walk around the chair, then stop. She rises from her knees, leaving the knife protruding from his belly. I am the mistress, come face to face with the missus. The television bathes us in an awful light. She is speckled with blood from pale face to bare feet. Her ballerina bun is perfectly messy. She folds her arms over her chest. "You won't need that," she says, eyeing my gun. I look at him. If I ignored the blood, he seems like he's sleeping. I wonder why I don't feel sad. "I guess not," I say. She reaches out and pats my bare shoulder. Her finger is still slick with blood. "Let's have a drink."
Nikki, how fun was that to write?
It was the greatest fun. I was asked to write something for a radio thing, and I hadn't written in a long time. And I was like, I got to do something. And I'm like, okay, we'll go to my strengths. Yeah.
It was something that you were going to read on the radio?
Yes. That is where cool. It started.
So you knew as you were going into it, I'm going to read this aloud.
Yes.
It kind of gives it a different feel as you're writing it, right?
Yeah. The thing is, with nearly everything that I'm in process of writing, I'm constantly reading it out loud back to myself. Mm-hmm. Because for me to be happy with it, has to have a certain bounce to it. Mm-hmm. And it's rhythm and that, but it's just got to kind of, you just want to kind of roll with it. And mm-hmm. if I can't get it there, then it feels broken to me. Mm-hmm. So I keep pushing that. And if I can't read it well, then can somebody, a different reader, pick up my book? Does it work that way? Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, reading aloud and, just reading to yourself are two different things, but I think there's entertainment wise, there's the commonality there that you just have to get sucked into it.
We want to be entertained as we're writing. Just as much as people reading do.
For sure.
Nikki, can we go back to picking up that 2005 edition of BAM and what you were doing maybe before that? You said that got you back into writing. So I was really curious to know kind of what your path has been to this point right now.
So I got married at 20, 21, and had kids. That's what I did with my 20s. I had no real creative outlet. And so I wasn't writing. I wasn't doing anything. I quilted. I painted things. Me and HGTV were really tight for a long time. but I had no like creative outlet, and I was fucking miserable.
Yeah. How many kids was it?
I have three.
Me too.
Yes.
Yes.
The thing was, like, the last thing I had written for my own enjoyment was probably in high school, but it was still a thing that I loved to do. I just hadn't done it in a decade plus. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, my youngest was going to be three. And I was like, that's it. We're not having any more. Never touch me again. Because all of my kids are 3 years and 9 months apart, essentially.
Oh, my goodness.
So, wow. Like, by the time they turned three, it was like, I'm pregnant. And it was just being pregnant and trying to work and, you know, keep the roof over your head, mm-hmm. and just, you know, be a person in the world took all of my time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the little kids, they're just, you know, they require a lot of attention, and you mm-hmm. want to, you know, they're cuddle monsters, and I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. And there comes a point where it took me a long time to get my feet back under me after each pregnancy. Mm-hmm. So I was just kind of like face down in just, you know, diapers and bills and working. And then at some point around time they're three, I'm like, okay, I'm good. And this time I didn't get pregnant. This time I signed up for a writing class.
Oh, wow.
The summer before that, I found that anthology. And I'm like, oh, these will be kind of fun to read. And I read it. And I think I read people I had never read before. Like, I never heard of them. Like, it was my 20s. I was just diapers and working, and I didn't do anything for me.
Please. I mean, to this day, I'm like, wait, who? Yeah. You know, like, you know, it's like that just happens.
Yes. And it's just like, I was like, oh, these are really cool. But I read Dennis Lehane's story Until Gwen. And I went, I want to do something that makes me feel like I do when I get done with the story. I mm-hmm. want to try to do that for somebody else. And I'm like, I used to write. Let's try writing. Writing might be work for us. So I signed up for this class, and I'm thinking workshop. So we're all going to get like a prompt maybe. And I don't know, read some Shakespeare. No. But no. This teacher... It was a workshop class. It's a college level workshop class. Like, bring your work in we're going to dissect it. Oh. But I didn't know these things. Man. So I was like, and they were like, and you, what's your name? And I'm like, Tamara. And he's like, great. You're going to have a story next week. And I'm like, what? What do you mean? And I did. He was like, yep, you're up. And that was it. Like that, there was, he didn't give us a prompt. He didn't tell us to read anything. He goes, okay, look, you know how a story works, right? And he was met with 20 people who blinked at him. He's like, okay, I'm not drinking. Okay, we're going to do this. Okay. This is how a story functions. I tease him, but actually he's like that teacher is Lee Barnes, and he's the single reason why I write now.
Oh, wow.
Because he took me under his wing and said, you're not bad at this. You should maybe do more. And, you know, I wrote a terrible story that he very gently told me was terrible in front of the whole class. But then he said, there's this sentence right here. He goes, I wish I had written that sentence.
Wow.
And that's the thing that like fueled me for at least the next 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And he told me I could do it, and I went, well, he's got books out, so obviously he knows what he's talking about.
Right.
And so that's the thing I did. And the stories in that book are stories that 2005 BAMs are the ones that I come back to. Mm-hmm. They're perfect to me.
Yeah.
And that Lehane story in particular is one, it's still my high bar. There are a lot of stories that I love, but that one is the one that I could have read so many times and just to like, okay, I need to touch base with who I am as a writer, what I want to be, and I would read that story. Mm-hmm. So
I totally get that. I recently pulled, I maybe mentioned this on last week's episode. I pulled Amelia Gray's Gutshot and Threats down off my shelf so that I could open them and page through them and remember, you know, you just like need to remember what you're in it for, you know?
Yes.
Need to see someone being like so brave and so themselves and just accomplishing this thing that you also are compelled to try.
Yeah.
I think that's beautiful.
With anthologies, especially, I mean, obviously not Amelia's books, but like BAM, I remember distinctly finding, I can't remember, it was, I think it was Vintage Contemporaries, the one that the canceled Richard Ford put together, but there's stuff in there that still, like, I never would have encountered it for the first Scott Bradfield. I think the first time I came across his work, or Barry Hanna. I mean, probably even like, Joy Williams was probably the first time I was exposed to her. Oh, so many names where you're seeing it for the first time and you're kind of like, what is this? And then it's like, oh my God, exactly what you're saying, Nikki, where it's just like, it's a whole world is opened up to you, but it feels, I think, more approachable in that form, in that anthology form, because you know, that's what they're designed to do. It feels like it's okay to not have a deep knowledge of this stuff yet. It feels like, okay, maybe I can kind of dip my toe into this. They're really pretty special in that way.
Yeah. And it, for somebody who's new to trying their hand at fiction or short fiction in particular. Yeah,
right.
And you know, there aren't any, you go in without any rules, like just write it. And so the rules that I had were the ones self-imposed, like, well, I need to write it like this because that's how they do it. And every, you know, my desire to write more always came directly after coming across a writer who did something that I didn't expect. And I'm like, oh, there are no rules. And then I'll just apply a different rule to myself. But still, like, I would just, oh, there's a new way of doing, there's constantly a different way of doing it. And digging out of all of that and figuring out what it is that I write and why I write that and why I write the way I do came out of reading those.
What do you think it is about crime? You know, you said you were watching a lot of HGTV, but were you also watching, you know, like Wicked Attraction or Discovery on ID or whatever, all those true crime shows? Or is it more literary crime that you're drawn to?
In my 20s, it was definitely the thing I did when I was pregnant. I would watch like Unsolved Mysteries. Oh,
yes. Give it to me.
Until like I would just like, because, you know, it would just be like on A&E and it would go into the night. Like just, and I was so miserable pregnant with all of them at some point. Without fail, I'd be up, you know, into the wee hours. And I would just watch them all until I got to the point where I scared my own self. And so then I had to start watching like Forensic Files because the bad guy gets caught.
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, I can sleep now because I could not sleep.
I will say Unsolved Mysteries has a podcast now, and the man who narrates it is so good and so like terrifying. And it's like all new stuff. It's not like they're not recycling their old stories. So I would recommend that if you're ready to be unsettled.
I have to think about that. Cause yeah, I was like, I am such a chicken, but there was something about being pregnant and watching like those things that just did it for me. Yes. I don't know why.
Yeah.
But before that, my mom was big on old mysteries, Sherlock Holmes. I watched those movies with her. Really, it was all the movies. Like I had, you know, of course, the Nancy Drew and the Hardy Boys series of books, but it was really watching those movies with my mom that helped kind of like shape me towards that. Like I had a very vague understanding of what like noir was, but later, when I really dug into writing and trying to understand the genre of crime as a whole, I got into, you know, what is noir and things like that, and found writers like Megan Abbott and Krista Faust, you know, who were writing things, you know, Hollywood glam, you know, 50s noir, you know, and the movies that inspired that, you know, like Gilda and Laura you know, it is much, it's scary, like gothic ones that were, I was always scared. Such a chicken. But like, you know, Vincent Price movies, you know, the back in the day, The House on Haunted Hill and and things like that. But you know, those are things that kind of like shaped my idea of what mystery and crime was. I mean, as much as I loved Agatha Christie, I didn't really discover that till later. Mm-hmm. It was really those early, like, you know, Sam Spade, Philip Marlowe type PIs that were, you know, you'd run into, or like Charlie Chan movies, or the Nick and Nora, the Thin Man movies. Those were a favorite. And then, you know, at some point it just tried to write science fiction. We shouldn't really talk about it. It's a very dark period. I Let's love definitely it so, talk about it so much. Like, it is, there is nothing I've read more of than probably science fiction. I mean, like, crime and that, really, just truly, it is my favorite thing. Give me a spaceship and a crime. So here's all of my money. Yeah, I don't care if it's good or bad or whatever. I'm in it. I'm here for it. But I, all of that built into, okay, I need to write a thing. What am I going to write? Okay, let's write a mystery. And I wrote a terrible story where a wife kills somebody, and that became my thing.
Yes.
I have lots of wives killing people. It's a thing.
Let's dive into that.
So I said I was married, and no, I'm kidding.
Right. Have you ever scared yourself when you were writing?
No, because they were so far away from who I am. Like, I can't even say, like, I gave them these desires so I wouldn't act on them. Like, in the early days of me writing it, it was like, I have, you know, I loved my husband.
Yeah.
I was stressed out by lots of other things, but I loved my husband. So, but I liked the idea of women pushed to that edge and like, you know what? I'm going to get me some revenge. And I'm like, yes, girl, go get it. Like, yes. Oh, I have to write that, don't I? You know, and, and, you know, guns always felt too easy. And so somebody almost always had a knife, because love is a very personal thing. And that's what drives a lot of the plot in my stories. It's the reason why people are doing bad things, because they love someone and can't have what they want. Or they need to protect them, or get their revenge because they've been left, you know, brokenhearted women, in particular, are my thing. I don't. Yeah. I again, I always say it, but I probably do need therapy.
Yeah, that's okay.
Every writer that has ever
been
existed,
there.
Therapy.
There you go.
What kind of work were you doing, and are you doing? You know, like, for money.
Whatever. No. So. I do actually, I still work in the same field I worked when I started. I work for civil engineers. So I am a designer. So in the early days, I worked for companies who were doing a lot of residential. So I have a hand in stripping the desert and adding to all of that. That's my guilt. Now we're, the office I work at is mostly commercial, but I put together those plans and, you know, push them through the agencies and am on construction sites and dealing with the little things that pop up that way. But we do that, all the underground, all that stuff. I draft all of that and do that.
So very different from what you do on the page.
Yes. Yes. Wow. It's only really the last few years that that has crept in, even like as a reference point for somebody having a job. Like, they've been a very separate things. So like, at work, I am, like I said, my name, my first name is Tamara, and it is my official on my birth certificate name. So that's the name I go by at work, but it is, you know, they're separate halves of me for a long time. that, you know, they never, the two, I didn't talk about my writing at work. I didn't talk about any of it. Cause I mean, I think there comes a point where you have to own up to, I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. Yes, I am. Mm-hmm. And
then people have all these weird questions, you know, that, yes, that you don't have worst. A satisfying answer for. So then it becomes weird for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm.
It's a crazy thing to say, I am a writer, mm-hmm. at least to me. Mm-hmm. And so it feels like you have to have a certain level of confidence about what you're doing that I barely have.
That's crazy.
But I have two books, so I kind of have to like own it, right?
Yeah.
You have two books, you're being anthologized in BAMS, and also I just saw you're doing another anthology, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. This was like the last year I've been invited to Anthos. So like, yeah, we've hit the point where I'm getting invited to things, and it's thrilling. But I didn't know that was I would tell baby writer me that maybe she should stop sooner. Just get out. Well, you know, publishing is a hard,
yeah,
a hard thing. And if I had known, I would have noped out real early because, you know, 32-year-old newbie writer me was not up to that, which I guess is good because I had a long lead time into being better and being somebody who was published.
Yeah. My agent referred to being a writer as being someone who is a professional rejection artist, or I can't remember exactly what he said. Your job is to be rejected, basically, because the acceptances are so few and far between and they feel so big. So they eclipse all of it. They feel so wonderful.
Yes.
But yeah, it puts hair on your chest.
It does. It does. And I just want to say, so the first story I ever sent out was accepted. And I was like, oh my God, wow.
This is amazing.
This is great. 3 years later, there was not another single acceptance after that.
Oh.
It was years.
Yep.
And I'm like, that was a nice taste I had of that. Mm-hmm.
Like, what happened there? I know my first story, I got accepted by Nerve. And that was back when they would pay writers, and I got $500.
Oh my God.
For this story called The Fence, which is in my book. And
that was your first one.
That was the first story I got published. I sent it to Nerve because Sarah Levine had been in Nerve, and I was like, I'm going to see if they like this.
Yeah.
And it was $500. And I was like, oh my God. Okay. It's happening. Like,
I guess I'm buying a house.
The ball is rolling down the hill. It's all going to snowball from here. Yeah. Uh-huh. And it really is like, it's a roller coaster. So it's like, sometimes you're like chugging up the hill. And then sometimes there's like this really fun, like woohoo down. And then, you know, sometimes you're vomiting over the side and, you know, like it's not ever like a straight line.
No. And I'm always queasy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. My digestive tract can't take it anymore.
No.
Well, how do you get the writing done?
Before times. Because I feel like the whole, all of 2020 is just this different thing. And it's like, really, there's 2 years of my life I'm never getting back because of last year.
And your collection came out in 2020, right?
Yes.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Ugh. Yeah and it seems like, oh, it was so long ago. I'm like, it hasn't even been a year.
No.
So
right
it is so time is very strange this last couple, but I now write, I'm kind of in a bad place writing, but before I wrote, you know, when it's new and it's fun, it's like falling in love. It's a new thing and you can't wait to do it again. And it's just, and it gushes out of you and you're cheating on every other part of your life and you're doing it everywhere and all of the time. And it doesn't matter if it's bad or not. It's just there. And it's, you know, I just poured myself out, for 6-7 years straight. And then it kind of dried up around 2011, 2012. and I didn't really write much of anything, but I had all of this work that, like, cause I poured it out and I didn't know what I'm doing. So I had all these things that were unfinished or weren't good enough for anybody to take, that I, you know, slowly had to, okay, what is wrong with this thing? How do I teach myself how to fix it?
Mm. So, and how did you teach yourself?
I read, the writers I wanted to be like. Mm-hmm. I read Melissa Bank. I read Ken Bruin. I read you know, Megan Abbott. I read, you know, anyone tangentially connected to those people, I read out from there. Mm-hmm. You know, I distinctly remember finding is it Last Night at Red Lobster? Stuart Ronan.
Oh, yeah.
I discovered him. Yeah.
Was it Last Night at the Lobster or something? Yeah.
I read like a bunch of his, you know.
I've never read any Stuart Ronan.
Well, he's so great. But I know,
I'm going to change.
those stories were just, they were so great, and I'm like, I could do better, and look how these people are doing it. And I would just read it over and over again. I always went back to that Lehane story, Until Gwen. I just look at that, and I'm like, because that was like the ideal, because it is so much more about, there's the crime, but there's like a crime and a crime, but the point of it, it's about identity and who we are before and after somebody loves us. Mm. And I'm like, okay, this speaks to me in such a way, but I don't know why. So I spent a lot of time trying to figure that out. And I read things. I read the people who talked about Lehane, and I read Lehane, and I read.
You were in your own little MFA program.
I was, you know, because I had to do something, because I didn't know anybody. I didn't know how any of it got done. You know, it was the time of the blogs, and I like followed Sarah Weinman and you know, and everybody she recommended, I would like, and write that down. Uh-huh. and there was, you know, the online crime fiction world was a very small one. And I still feel like it's a very small community of writers. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they, you know, all they do is talk about their favorites. I mean, I suppose that's like that with all writers everywhere, but in this very niche genre, all they do is talk about their favorites and the people I didn't know. And you know, short stories get short shrift, I think. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of true just crime short stories. I mean, over and above like Alfred Hitchcock magazine and Ellery Queen magazine, just people publishing different places who are writing these things. Mm-hmm. And so I just chased around my favorites until I got better. And I don't really know when that was or when I just decided that I can't be them, so I have to be me. Mm-hmm. And I think that was like the moment that it got better for me. Because there's, I think in my book, there's a few stories from the early days of me writing, but most of it comes from that latter half or that period of time where I was rewriting, trying to figure out why nobody would take my story.
No, I know. Like, I think we all spend so much of our younger writing lives, our newer writing lives, trying to write the thing that we love. Mm-hmm. Like my Lehane story, the one that I keep trying to write over and over and over again, is Joyce Carol Oates' story called Where Are You Going? Where Have You Been? And
yes,
I love that story. It is perfect to me. It does everything I could ever dream of. Mm-hmm. And so I just keep trying to write that story. But eventually it's like you said, you come to the point where you're like, wait a minute, you know, like I can't write this. So I'm just going to fucking be who I am. And then you're like, that's so silly. Of course I'm going to be who I am, you know, but it does, you have to come to that realization and you know, that's huge. That's a huge breakthrough, I think, for any writer.
I'm still figuring out who I am as a writer. And that's a lot of, like, I figured out like one aspect of it, which is, what do you write about? Well, I write about love and identity. Thank you. but I think there's another aspect of that I'm working on figuring out. And it's how to dig beyond, I think, the obvious representations of that.
Yeah.
There's always a part of me that wants to write the story that I've already read, but just fill it with Black people. And I'm like, well, everybody's already read that, but they haven't read it like this.
Yeah.
And so I think that was also part of, you know, you just can't write that story and then, you know, self-insert a character who you know, speaks like you want to, if that was you in that situation.
But I think that is a starting point, right? Like, that's a
I was gonna say, I think you can totally do it, because people won't recognize it. I think that's always the thing that's surprising, is even when you feel like you're maybe ripping something off wholesale, if you hand it to someone, a lot of times they're like, oh wow, yeah, great, you know, and they have no way to really reverse engineer where you started. And I mean, even someone maybe familiar with the work that you felt like you were ripping off, I don't know, I feel like so often those connections are much more personal and hard to hard to track than maybe we think they are.
For me, and it just seems like particularly in the early 2000s, when it was just the sea of very young writers getting very big deals and becoming very big deals. And then I was there with three kids and, you know, approaching my mid-30s. And I'm like, I'm never going to be that level. I've already missed it. You're never getting on one of those, you know, under 35 lists. You're never going to
fuck those lists,
that.
Nikki. Fuck those lists. They are so, and no shade to anyone, because there's a lot of writers that I love that have been on those lists. But fuck those lists. You shouldn't be applauded for your age.
No, and I totally get that now, but like,
I know what you're
2008,
saying.
2008, 2010, me was very much like, well, we're old now, so
you're in BAM. You are in, like, give me a break. It's amazing. It's amazing what
it is.
Just listening to your path, it's so inspiring. It's amazing. I love it. I mean, the fact that you started this conversation even before you read, and you said you found the anthology at a thrift store, and now you're in BAM. That is insane.
It is, I guess, when you put it that way. Yeah.
it's
fantastic.
Beautiful. Yeah.
But I also want to recognize the 2008 you sitting there going, motherfucker, you know, like,
yeah, she got rejected a lot.
Yeah. you know, that is hard. It does feel like, and especially because you're like, okay, I think I can get 20 minutes of writing done, and you sit down and 7 minutes into it, your kid's like, ma, you know, and it's just like, God, I just want to write, you know, like, and it feels like the world is slipping away from you.
For
but
sure.
Then look, it didn't.
No. I also think you just need to grow into the kind of writer you're going to be.
Yeah.
I think maturity level that I didn't have as a writer, that, you know, it's like when you have kids, you're instantly like, okay, you're a mom, you're a dad, go. And you're like supposed to have all this, like, I'm like, where's my download of all of this information that I'm supposed to have? Cause I read the whole what to expect when you're expecting. There's no, like, there's 75 other books that come after that, but none of them really spoke to me. You know, there's no, this is how to raise your kid book. So
yeah, exactly.
And there was no, you know, so you were on the ground and you were doing it. And then, but to be a writer, it was like, okay, I might as well be, you know, a kid again, because I don't know how to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I'm reading poets and writers, and I'm reading all the blogs, and I'm reading everything. And I'm like, oh, so this is what this is supposed to look like. And I don't line up to any of that.
Mm-hmm.
which is, I think also there's a correction happening now. Mm-hmm. In the last, decade or so that's come, particularly in the last few years, of a correction in that, mm-hmm. of what a writer's supposed to look like. Mm-hmm. Also, I guess what the market is looking for, quote unquote, mm-hmm. Because the stuff that they weren't taking from me earlier on, not saying that it was good, but there also wasn't that many places to take it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
You know, mm-hmm. I mean, like there's, you know, crime is its own little corner, and now the corner is bigger than it used to be. And you know, I managed to stick out long enough to like get a little bit in there, and yeah.
That's right. You're in the corner. You are in.
I'm in the corner.
The corner.
I, you know, and I have friends that are in that corner, and I have. I mean, that's the other thing. A writing community, mm-hmm. having somebody. I mean, I didn't have an MFA. I mean, I don't even have a college degree. So, I to find writers like me, like-minded, who want to talk about it. Because even if I'm not writing, I still want to talk about writing and my aggravation. I mean, like, you know, don't y'all? I mean, it's
yes.
I mean, I don't know about your spouses in your everyday, but like mine was super supportive, but there was no. What are you talking about? So you're killing somebody?
Right.
How do you, honey, I don't know how you would do you want me to ask somebody who's super supportive, but also not quite what I'm going for?
So, you want me to ask somebody?
You know, yeah. I mean, Yahoo Answers is gone now, so I can say this. So he went to Yahoo Answers for me. He's like, what should she do now? And I'm like, no.
Oh, my God. You should write that story.
The secondhand mortification that I have over many things, it's just built into me. So like I don't watch prank shows because I feel bad for people. Mm-hmm. I don't watch I don't want to see people get really embarrassed because I feel it really badly and I cover mm-hmm. my face watch. Like nobody can see me and they're falling down, but it's me who's falling down. Like so this is I could not like this thing has existed on the internet for decades now, and I'm just like, well, I can't even go away. If you had dug deep enough, you would have come across it. And I was like, I appreciate that so much, but oh my God, take it down. And you can't. So it was finally like, I have to do better just so I can bury this in the internet search results.
My God. Well, rest in peace, Yahoo Answers.
Yes. Yeah. 401 out for you tonight. Yep.
Well, you said that you're not in the best place right now, writing wise. Is that because of the pandemic or?
You know, it's very much, I, it's part of the pandemic, but also my writing was kind of not in a great place anyway. Mm. Like I said, after 2012, like this family stress, you know, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The turndown, I mean, completely shut down construction in Las Vegas, and I didn't have a job anymore. Mm-hmm. And my then husband had been laid off a year before that. So now we were both laid off. And so, you know, you pick up your life, you circle the wagons and take yourself off to some other place to go hide out in your dad's basement, mm-hmm. Till you figure out your life. And that's not, for me, was not great for writing.
I hear that.
So like all I was doing was searching unemployment ads. So I'd get my unemployment benefits and like desperately hoping somebody would hire me. And then that, it just, I've never been quite the same.
Yeah.
I don't think. I mean, it's like, The years before that were really great. I found my dad lived in Hazelcrest. So that's where I was at. And I had access to Chicago and Columbia College, Chicago. And I met people there. And that, you know, being in that group helped my writing. But once I was out of there, it stopped completely. So you put your head down and I'm going to do this thing for me, but you also have to feed your kids and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job back in the world came back, turned back on in like 2013, and I got a job and thought, you know, we were going to, okay, we're gonna get back on the bike and we're going to do it all fine. And my marriage ended.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, and then you're okay, that's fine. We're still, no, yeah, do this by yourself now and it's going to be fine. And so I was just really like, I would poke at things, but I wouldn't write.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just tried to figure out what I'm going to do. And I wasn't reading and I wasn't writing and I'm like, God, I'm miserable. So you have to write something. So I started to force myself and, you know, you go and you dig out your old copies of drafts of things that you thought were going to be great. And I put together a bunch of stories and I sent them out and somebody finally took it and said, okay, we'll make a book out of this. And that was 2015. And I said, well, okay, well, I have a book now. So you should be a real writer. You have a book. So,
yeah,
mm-hmm. You know, because of that, I made other connections and somebody wanted me to write that story for that. I read The Mistress,
mm-hmm.
For like an online radio thing. And I sat down and I wrote that and that kind of made me, okay, well, we did this little step. So we'll do this next little step. And I wrote something else and, it's come back a little bit, but like everything else, nothing was like when you first get started.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the most I've written was, 2019. I think I wrote 4 whole stories that year and I've never been prouder of myself.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Finished, sent them out. And it's great, but I can't, I wish I could say, this is why I'm not writing. Fix this one thing, but it's everything. It's just me. And it's me in my head. And, writer's block is real. I don't care what people say, but it's also in my head.
Yeah. I mean, you're still healing, right? Like you're still in the healing process. And then the pandemic happened and it's like, you know.
Yeah. Well, I'm like, okay, I'm home now. It was going to be great. Yeah. No, I'm just home.
Yeah.
Not writing. And not reading. Like, I don't like, how's your focus? Cause like mine's shot.
Yeah. For me, it's like, that's my sense of self is like my little, like 5 pages I get to read every day and whatever writing I get to do every day. And I'm a better mom if I get those things.
Yeah.
And sometimes I just, I like, you know, I have days where I don't have anything to say, but I force myself to type because mm-hmm. I want like little breadcrumbs to come back to and work with, you know?
Yeah.
But I would say like after my first baby was born, after each kid was born, it took me years, you know, mm-hmm. like to get back into, cause it sets you outside of yourself. Any big event like that, you know, like, and I think in some ways giving birth is kind of a trauma. I mean, it's a trauma on your body. And you're whether you want to admit it to yourself or not, and when I say you, I mean me.
Yeah.
You have fundamentally changed, and you know that it takes time to get to wrangle your writing voice back. You know, to sort of like it's mm-hmm. always like sort of like swimming around you like an octopus or something, but mm-hmm. then you have to find a way to fasten it back onto your head. What am I saying? But you know what I mean. Like,
yeah,
it's. It takes time. And when you are a writer, it feels like it already takes too much time as it is. Mm-hmm. So it's like,
yes.
I don't have the time to spare.
Yeah. I mean, if you're on your own internal deadline,
mm-hmm.
You know, which you're okay. No, I'm going to come back to that any minute. Okay. Well, it's been 3 years. You're going to come back now.
Right.
Internal deadline. That's so real. I mean, it's like this, the self-imposed, like there's so much meaning attached to those. I feel like that's really how I mark time. It's like mm-hmm. either I am waiting for someone to give me, you know, some kind of feedback on something, or I'm waiting on a yes or a no on something, or I just know that I have to get 15 pages before such and such date so I can submit it to whatever. And it's like, yeah, exactly. It's these, it's like, that's really where, oh my God, I almost said meaning comes from in my life, which is like no, embarrassing, but it's true. I mean, it's true. I mean, it's kind of scary how powerful those internal deadlines, as you said, are. It's wild.
But you're staying connected, right, Nikki? I mean, like, you're still like very much in the world of writing, even as you're not, you know, putting anything down on the page.
Yeah, I have a friend I talk to pretty regularly, mostly about his writing, but even in doing that, that's mine.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's to keep, I mean, thinking about your writing is still writing.
Mm-hmm.
So I fully you know, believe that. And so talking to him about his helps me. Mm-hmm. You know, he's like, well, I don't think this works, or no, what do you think about that? And I'm like, I don't love it, but maybe if you did that, or I love it, dude, which is usually what it is, because he's an excellent writer and he just needs somebody to bounce, you know, the words off of. And I'm like, here for it. But sometimes, you know, it's yeah, I think we're going to do this with this character. And I'm like, please don't kill her. I like her. Don't kill her. I mean, you do what you want, but don't kill her. But, you know, it's how, you know, he writes novels and mostly, and I mostly write short stories. He writes everything, really. It's good to have someone who, A, is also somebody who is just the next level up. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, he's that good. And I'm not, you know, he just, to read what he's working as he's working on it, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's how he's putting together his book. No, I see that, that's good. You know,
is he in BAM?
He is not in BAM.
Oh, okay, just want to make that clear.
Alex, he is my friend, and him not being in BAM is really just an oversight, I feel.
I want to build you up a little bit. You were being a little too hard on yourself.
No, like, I know the things I'm good at, and like, I can't write a novel. Like, I have tried. I know how a novel works. I have yet to write one. I have written a novel in stories. That which counts. Is what the first one is, but you know, a traditional, you know, novel has escaped me. Like, I think I'm slowly just coming to grips with the fact.
If you don't need any more traditional novels.
Yeah, and you know what? If you wanted to do it, you would do it. I really feel like people who are like, ah, how do I write the novel? How do I know? It's like, I'm not sure that you. If you're obsessed by it, you will just do it. I mean, you know, it's the same way you were obsessed by these short stories, and the ones that you came back to, that is really what you were obsessed with, and that's why you got so good at writing them, and that's why you are where you are. I mean, if you were obsessed, if you really were obsessed with wanting to write one of these novels, you would do it. I think sometimes people are so hard on themselves with not having written a novel yet or whatever. It's like, I bet it hasn't hooked you in the same way whatever form you're working with has, and that's okay. It's fine.
That's the way it should be. And I will say, like, I'm in a phase right now, and I have been for years, where writing stories is harder. It's so hard.
Going back and forth is hard. It's been almost 5 years on the thing I've been working on, a novel, and I would short stories are what I love most. And I would love to go back and write short stories, but it's like, it is hard to get back into that brain after like thinking novel for so long. They are different. I mean, as far as just even just from a momentum standpoint, I feel like, because what you described, Nikki, as far as like that 6-7 year period where you were just like always working on a story, I had a period like that too, and that is the best feeling. When you can kind of like chain smoke them, almost like go from story to story, and like it really is a high because of the rate of like completing something whole and then on to the next. And it's like, that's an amazing feeling that you really don't get from working on a novel. And I would love to get to that point again, but it's hard to get in that headspace for sure.
Yeah. God, it was so, yeah, chain smoking. That's really, that's perfect right there. Yeah, it's that. It is very much that. It's no, but I guess it is very much residual, all the things I learned when I was trying to figure out how to be a writer. And you gotta have a novel, says every agent ever.
Right.
Yeah.
They do. You know, they do say that.
You know, and I'm like, you know, Amy Hempel doesn't have a novel, but I am no goddamn Amy Hempel. I'm like,
yeah, you're Nikki Dolson.
Yes. And
you get a dog like her.
I would love to have a dog too.
Yeah, she's got a great whole thing. Dog.
Yeah. I told my kids, because they're like, we want a dog. No, I don't have little ones like y'all do anymore.
Right.
But my youngest is going to be a senior this year.
Wow.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I'm old.
Mm-hmm. Oh. No, I just mean in terms of like you're young. Wait, did you say your oldest is going to be a senior or your youngest?
My youngest is going to be a senior.
I mean, like when you level to that as a mom, it's got to be so wild and heart wrenching and just everything all at once.
I was listening to the podcast with Amber Sparks.
Mm-hmm.
Y'all were talking about like bathroom time, and it reminded me of my youngest. Like, you know, I'm in the bathroom hiding out essentially, and the little hands and the little toes that peek underneath.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And my youngest would send his Hot Wheels cards to me because he wanted me to have them if I was going to be in there a long time. Oh, like, that's what. Yeah. And now he's going to be, he's 18 this September and he's a senior.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. And my oldest in those moments, 26.
Oh, my gosh. Those moments when they're being so cute, they're sent, you know, like sending the little Hot Wheels. Mm-hmm. For me, I'm like, I know this is so cute and precious, but I also am like, please.
Oh yeah, it's cute now. Then I was like, yeah, I'm gonna be out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mommy just need another minute. Please go away. Please. I just like, yeah, to like get your head on straight and to come out of work mode to, you know, mom mode.
Yeah.
Parent mode.
Yep.
For sure.
Well, thank you for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
She's awesome.
I love her story, and it's
her stuff's good. It's like hard scrabble.
Yeah, I read most of the stories in Love. Let me pull it up here. Love and Other Criminal Behavior. Mm-hmm. And I think the one that Nikki read is a great example of the stories in there. And mm-hmm. if that's something that you dig, man, you should pick up that book because it's got a lot of that. It was really good.
I really love Our Man Julian, which is, I think, the penultimate story.
Okay.
It's about like this older man in California. And I don't know. It feels like,
I like that one. The one with the cane, but it also feels kind of bigger.
Yes, that's what I was gonna say. It does. Yeah. It totally does. It like it feels like I feel so lame saying this over and over again because we say it a lot, but I felt like it could be a novel. I was like, make this into a novel.
That opening paragraph of that story could easily be the opening of a novel. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel that way about all of them because and you shouldn't, they're short stories, but yeah, definitely Our Man Julian feels like it could be a bigger story if she wanted it to be.
Yeah. Everyone go buy that book. It came out in 2020. Yeah. So it deserves another look, round of excitement. And her story Neighbors is going to be in Best American Mystery and Suspense. Pretty awesome.
Definitely cool.
And she was great.
Mm-hmm. It was funny when she was talking about figuring out where to send stories. I can't even remember now where she said, but she said she figured out where to submit based on whatever. I can't even remember the writer she mentioned, but I figured out where to submit because of where you published. I mean, you know that. I've told you that before.
Yeah. Yep.
But like,
I know that's how I roll too.
Yeah. I mean, I literally would just be like, okay, where's Lindsay popping up? And I would submit there. And you need to have someone that you can track like that, because it's hard when you're starting out. It's like, it's not even whether or not you have good taste or not. It's just like, you literally don't know the places.
Yeah. There's nowhere like, hey, start here. And you know, when she was talking about how she was reading all the blogs and she was reading poets and writers, I can remember picking up poets and writers and like reading it and just like trying to find myself in there, and you can't, you know, like, no. and I just really related to how she was saying, like, I didn't see the writer that I was. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, like it's, and eventually, you know, the poets and writers will feature writers that are like you or feature you. And, you know, then it starts to, then you start to see those things, but it is crazy. You just sort of like, I can remember Googling like where to submit. And then there's all these wacky lists that come up that, you know, half the links don't work.
Right.
Cause you just don't know.
Yeah, it's true. And it's funny too. I mean, even the journals now, they've all changed hands, it feels like. And like I am like way out of touch on online journals at this point, but yeah,
me too. And I have all these stories and I want to send them out, and I just don't know. I don't know where to go like I used to know.
Yeah, I mean, other than I consistently have been liking Joyland.
Oh my god, they're so good.
Joyland's been on a roll recently. The Aaron Summers story was really, really good. And then there was another one recently that I really liked, and I can't remember which one it was, but there's something too just about their general aesthetic that I like. The art is consistently great. Alex Higley, nice, good guy.
That's the story.
Lindsay Hunter,
Lindsay Hunter's been published there.
She's a good one.
And the other one that I like to send to sometimes, just this small little place called The New Yorker.
Oh, sure, The New Yorker, yeah.
So it's Joyland and The New Yorker.
That's
if
it.
You listeners need to Google.
Right. Oh my God. What was I guess? But someone was saying, my buddy Kevin Stern was saying online, he asked on Twitter, he was like, do you think there are too many journals? And my instant thought was, there are way too many journals, but there's also not enough good ones. Well, I think it's true. I don't mean it as a burn. It's just like, I don't think a lot of them break through the noise, you know? Good Writing Week, you still crushing?
Still crushing. I actually, speaking of brave, I've been trying to just be like utterly brutal. And I ended up, you know, like I told you, I was almost to 30,000 words and I deleted 8,000 words.
Oh, wow. Eight?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I mentioned this last week that I realized what perspective the book needs to be in. Mm-hmm. And so I deleted all the other perspectives, and then I had to rework a bunch of other scenes. And it was great though, because I more than ever just want, like, I just want to say what's happening. Like, and I don't want to go too far back and like explain, you know, like, and so I'm trying to make it my wind up toy.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it felt like, and I spent like 4 days trying to talk myself out of it, you know, like, no, we could make this work, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then just like, I had like a big chunk of time to write. Thanks, honey bunna. Because my mother-in-law was here, so they took the kids, and I just did it. I just deleted.
That's awesome.
I put it into another document. You know, that's how you can always trick yourself. You can always trick yourself like, oh no, this isn't permanent.
That's the best trick though, because you'll never open that up.
Never, never again. And I'm glad. And so now I'm just rebuilding, and it's been really fun. It's been really fun to just like, it was freeing deleting all that stuff and, you know, like reworking everything. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. So we'll see. I just need time.
Yeah. Oh my God. Definitely.
But yeah, I've started reading Lisa Taddeo's Animal.
Yeah, I started as well.
Hint, hint, everyone.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Future guest.
Future guest. And I finished Whip Smart by Melissa Phoebos.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
And that had a lot of really interesting revelations in it that I enjoyed. So I'm excited to read Abandon Me, which I think is her second one.
That's a great title.
Ben wants everyone to know he finished Deacon King Kong. He read me the first paragraph of that book. Have you read it?
No, but I have heard good things.
Yeah, we were just we were talking about first paragraphs, and he read me the first paragraph of that book, and you're immediately within like the first two sentences, you know where you are, what year it is, you know who you're looking at. It's like masterful. And then Ben told me that actually you also know in that first paragraph everything that matters in the rest of the book.
Love it.
It's amazing. That's it. Oh, no, I have more. We watched this movie last night called Save Yourselves.
Don't know it.
And it's fantastic. I highly recommend it. And it's also part of the Hulu-sance. Did we talk about that before? How all the good movies are on Hulu?
Gosh. Yeah, Mr. Mom's on Hulu.
Okay, Mr. Mom. That's an example. Mm-hmm. But like last weekend, we watched this movie called Spontaneous, or 2 weekends ago, we watched a movie called Spontaneous, which is about exploding teenagers.
Wonderful.
It is a rom-com also.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I've mentioned that movie Alone, which is about a serial killer, but like an interesting serial killer.
Mm-hmm.
Or like an interesting serial killer movie. And it's all on Hulu, people. Sputnik, that's another one. Nikki mentioned
Sputnik.
I meant to say this to Nikki. Sputnik is a movie. It's Russian, and it's a spaceship, and it's crime, and it's everything she could want.
Get her back on the horn. We got to tell her about Sputnik.
Nikki, are you listening? She probably saw it.
The last movie I watched on Hulu was The Sisters Brothers, which...
Oh, I love that book.
Fucking rips.
Patrick DeWitt needs to write another book so I can be happy again.
I've never read any of his books, but...
Oh my God, what? You would love them.
Would I really? I got to check them out.
They're incredible. Yeah. No, I like... Get out of here!
More Ben.
He was trying to talk shit about the last Patrick DeWitt book. Oh, he doesn't know.
I read it.
Honey, are you talking... Isn't it called French Exit? Yeah. You loved that book.
He's
okay,
too,
here,
he's
here's
too
some
busy
Ben's
with form. The Normasan still.
Yeah, listen...
That was a novel that should have been a story. Oh, on the top ropes.
Okay, anyway, let me tell you something about Ben, okay? If you guys are interested in Ben's corner, here's a truth about Ben. He will read a book, and as he's reading it, he'll be like, oh my God, man, this book is so good. I cannot get enough of it. I love this book so much. Like, he'll just be over there in his corner like, oh, or he'll be like, oh, or he'll be like, oh my God, now that person can write. And he'll just be like pooping his pants about how great the book is. And then like 5 days later when he's done, and you know, 5 days have passed, I'll be like, oh yeah, but you really love that book. And he'll be like, yeah, it was all right. Every time. And sometimes he'll go back and edit his Goodreads reviews. He is a tragedy.
What a monster.
He is giggling over there. He will. Like, he'll just go on and on like, oh, this book. And then I'll be like, oh, so did you give it 5 stars? Three stars, maybe four. God.
Jesus Christ.
He's a mess. He loved French Exit. We both read it at the same time. So get out of here. Okay, anyway, you would love him.
Yeah, I got to check him out. The movie is great, though. It's Jacques Audouard. I don't know how to say it. I think it's Audouard, but he's maybe my favorite filmmaker. Mm. And also on Hulu, Deepan. DHEEPAN, great movie.
Okay,
and if you ever saw the movie, oh my God, I'm forgetting the prison one.
Wait, Deepan, can you spell that again?
DHEEPAN. Rust and Bone rips. A Prophet is the one I'm thinking of. A Prophet. If you haven't seen A Prophet,
honey,
you know who would like that? Nikki would like that movie. That is all these movies are just like. Absolute rippers.
They're all the same filmmaker?
All same filmmaker, yeah.
Okay.
He's yeah, just like there's hard. Like huge energy to his movies, and just they always have a moment where I just feel like movies don't get better than this. Like, it's just, I don't know. I'm a total fanboy for him.
This is awesome.
Yeah, I think you would really like the Rust and Bone. I think you would love Rust and Bone. It's so good. Anyway, I've actually been reading. I'm doing an event with a buddy for their book coming out. Geez, today's Sunday. On Tuesday, my buddy Alex McElroy has a book coming out called The Atmospherians. And so I've been rereading it because I read an earlier draft. And so it's been really fun because I think I read that draft over 2 years ago.
Wow.
And so now I'm reading the finished book and going to talk to them for their event. And it's just, it's been so fun to kind of remember what the draft was and then see this finished book. And it's a really good book. It's a lot of fun. So I would definitely recommend so picking that one up.
Them. Yeah,
it's a good one.
Yeah. People are buzzing about that book.
For sure. And
they got to come on.
Yeah. That would be fun. That would be fun. Alex is great. So that's been fun rereading. I haven't had that experience where I've read like a really early draft of something and then had it actually get published later on by a buddy. This is the first time that's happened to me. So this has been really fun. I'm sure you've had that happen a bunch, but.
I read a draft of The Grip of It.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Were the chapters the same length in that early draft that you read? Because that's the thing I always think about with that book is how you get absolutely hooked by just like the page and a half chapters. It's just like the most effective tool to keep you in.
No, they were. And it gives this feeling of like strobing almost.
Mm.
And it's disorienting, yes. You know? And like you're trying to get this like comfort, this feel of like place, but she kind of rips you, you know, out of it. With the shortness. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh man, I can't wait for her. Do you know anything about her, the book she's working on right now?
I don't.
I think it was like 100,000 words.
Oh, wow.
Maybe even like 200,000 words. And she has like for the past 2 years been whittling it down.
Oh, wow.
And it's based on a duke, I think, or a king, like a Belgian duke or a Belgian king.
This is sounding vaguely familiar from something she posted, but I can't remember now.
She's been doing like crazy research for it. I think it's coming out on FSG Originals.
And she's been in San Diego for so long now.
I know. Weird.
God.
So weird. Hi, crazy. Jack. We love you.
Hi, Jack.
Alex, where can they sign up to see you and Alex's event for the Atmospherians?
So if you go to Pilsen Community Bookstore's website, they have an event page and I think there's just a link right there. Easy. Or you could go to Alex McElroy's Twitter or my Twitter and there'll be a link somewhere. And
right,
it's
right on.
It's the 20th. So Thursday, May 20th.
Excellent.
Bye.
Bye. I'm a Writer But is recorded by Alex Higley and me, Lindsay Hunter, in our respective basements. Because there's a pandemic out there, please wear a mask.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Editing by Lindsay Hunter. Music by Max Loop.